Mr. Palmer, Reel 13. We've come now to the point where you came back from the Middle East, really, and back to Italy.
Well, I'm going back from Italy because the voyage, from my point of view, was quite interesting. You know, we were saying how, for instance, if you have nothing to do, particularly on board ship, or even in the line, or out of the line, that's the worst part of all. So that I was asked, I think I was asked by the colonel, but it would probably come through, it would come through the intelligence officer, Captain Lindley, that I should prepare news bulletins to give to the troops over the radio, which is what I did, and I was allowed to collect from the from where the radio operator was working. I was allowed to collect from him the news flashes that had come through on his machine. You know, all just as they came through, they would be registered on there, and take these away, and then prepare a bulletin to issue. And the interesting part was that I didn't say very much to anybody, and some people said, well, who on earth is that? So I didn't recognize my voice. Anyway, I did this for the whole of the journey. I don't know how many days it took, but this is what I had to do. For which I, in a way, I was grateful. It was, I'd never done anything like that before, but it was good. So when we got back to Italy, we moved up to fairly near to Assisi, to what was the place called here?
Bastarda. Bastardo.
Well, that's not really. I don't remember anything much about that. But it was.
This was in early July that you.
Yes, it was near Assisi anyway. And we were there until we moved up into the line. And as you mentioned before, there was a fair amount of boat drill, and the rest of it came into because there was still a reckoning there would be rivers to cross, and there were, as it turned out. And we used to get plenty of recreation there, and I think I've already suggested to you that there was table tennis, there were football matches arranged, there were one or two intercompany cricket matches and this sort of thing.
There's also
there was basketball as well, because while we were there, we played quite a bit of basketball, I think nearly every day. And we each had a team, and the battalion headquarters had a team, and I played for that, and some of the orderly room staff played as well, and also the RSM. So we had a fairly representative team. I can't remember whether there were any officers played or not, but we had plenty of time for leisure. So.
While you were there, you had a sort of grand fate, sort of with shows and red car races, a knockout football competition, and a dance band. Do you remember that at all?
Don't remember a thing about it. No.
Anything else about this period? Were you nervous about going back into action?
Well, I think everybody would be nervous about it. We would rather not have gone back, you know. I don't, quite honestly, I don't think anybody enjoyed it. And, of course, the preparations for it were vastly necessary, but there you are. I mean, one might say you do all the preparation for it, and then, of course, you could be out on the first day.
Now, you left Bastardo on the top, near Assisi. Anyway,
Bastardo, that was the name of the place that I couldn't remember.
You left that on the 22nd of August and moved up to Isola di Fana, which is just behind the line.
Yes, I can remember a thing. All that I can remember there of that is moving forward this night. And as it moved forward, we had our jeep to move forward. And we hadn't got a dozen yards, I don't think, when the thing went up on a mine. And one of the sections was sitting on the front, he was sitting on the bonnet, and he was blown off, and of course I was sitting next to the driver, but there were sandbags in the seat, so that lessened the impact to a large extent. But when I got out, of course, I could hardly walk. I could hobble. So of course they sent both of us back, we were the only two who were affected, and Lance Corporal Harry Senior, he died that night.
Do you have any impression of what it was like when the mine went off?
No, except of course it was like so many of the big bangs that we'd had before. I mean, I can remember another occasion where it was, you know, pretty near thing, and when we were talking about Salerno and being in the slit trench and with Lance Corporal Billington being in the slit trench with me and being effectively shell shocked we were getting out when the thing was over and we moved Peter Billington just on the back of me. While we're in the slip trench, I'd taken my belt off and the pouches and everything in order to get closer in, and I put them on back behind my head. And when I lifted my head, they'd been blown to pieces. Well, if not blown to pieces, that's probably an exaggeration, but they certainly had been hit.
So it was just a large bang, as far as you were concerned.
It was just a large bang.
And do you know exactly where you were?
What, in relation to what?
Well, were we behind the line, or moving up? Or
we were moving up.
We were not
in the line. We would be in reserve, and we would be moving up to take up preparatory positions, I should think, being the first day in. It always takes a little while to carry these movements through.
So it was the British side of the line, so it was an uncleared mine.
It was an uncleared mine, yes.
Now, how badly wounded were you?
Well, I didn't know the extent of the damage, and that night I couldn't sleep, and I was listening to Senior's groans and the rest of it, and trying to sort of shout at him was giving him a bit of comfort, but he obviously got it badly. I should think he must have got something through his middle. They took us both back, and we went back in the same ambulance, from what I remember. And we were moved from that first aid post. I was moved the following morning back to another one, and all I can remember of that is being told by the orderly that I'd be in a pretty bad way myself. I have no recollection of this at all. And I was sent back to a base hospital. And from there, after a couple of days, because the foot had not improved much, it was still black and blue and the rest of it, and I was still hobbling around on it, they didn't take any x-ray there. I think it was just a kind of clearing station. They either cleared you back into the line or they cleared you behind. So I went back to Bari. And at Bari, I was still hobbling about on it. And I had my boots on. And one time I could, climbing up some steps, I felt it go. So they arranged post haste to give me an x-ray. I don't know why they didn't do that before. And I'd broken my foot. So in due course I was sent back, when I could hobble around, I was sent back to near not very far from Naples anyway. I was sent back to this hospital, and again it was one where you had walking wounded, more or less walking wounded, and it still had plaster and whatnot. And I volunteered. I thought rather than just sit around, I went to one of the Army Education Corps lectures. And I said, well, I wouldn't mind doing a little bit of this. So with their assistance, I gave talks and this kind of thing.
What sort of topic?
Oh, again, concerned with the news and what's happening. And we were getting close, of course, to election time. So there were certain pamphlets were issued. I don't say they were issued to the troops as a whole, but they were issued to those who were in the Army Education Corps.
Now, they wouldn't have election pamphlets in 1944.
No. But
I think this is later on.
Maybe, but anyway, it was probably just concerned with the news and what was happening, and perhaps general topics. If we say perhaps that the political scene was not forgotten, but certainly not elections, perhaps. It's not easy to remember, you know, what you actually did do. From there, before Christmas, I was moved back to near Sorrento, to another one. Where
how was your foot at this time? Had it?
Well, it was getting mobile now. Still limping, but I was getting mobile. And I went back to this place over Christmas, and then I was dispatched to a clearing camp where they would send people back perhaps into the line. But the war, from what I can remember, this was round about the time that the war was coming to an end. I wasn't past as fully fit yet. And I was asked to take over from someone who was doing Army educational work. I don't think he was in the Army Educational Corps. The sergeant at this base camp, and he was going away on leave for I don't know how long, a week or 10 days. But anyway, he was going away for this time. He said, "Now look, the colonel here is very keen on music, and we have a gramophone. We've got the records, and he said what you would have to do is to give a little talk." Before you put the records on, they had, records of Beethoven's, chiefly orchestral music, I think it was. They had the symphonies and so on, and the concertos and this sort of thing. And I had to prepare a program which I thought would be appropriate, and the colonel would come along with one or two other people. I don't think there were many people that were interested, but he was. And I only did this twice, I think. But the colonel seemed quite pleased.
So you do a talk putting the music in context, a bit about what it was about and
that's right,
what the composer intended.
That sort of thing, and how the movements were built up and so on and so forth. There wasn't a great deal of time, of course, to do this, but because I was already engaged during the day on giving lectures to the people coming in and going out. And
You still weren't
a transit camp in that sense.
But you weren't formally in the Army Education Corps yet? You hadn't been transferred in there yet?
Wait a minute.
Or had you switched?
I think this would be where I was transferred into it, I don't think I'd been formally accepted or anything like that. And of course, I then became a local page sergeant, and at the end of the war, after writing to the minister, there was Lawson, Lord Lawson. I don't know whether he was a lord then or not. And mentioning that as a local page sergeant, I felt that having done the work in the latter part, that I might get a gratuity for that, which I did actually, in the end. Because I did the local page sergeant's work for about a year.
Did you? What exactly was your work then?
Well, I didn't stay at this place very long because I was moved to another one. And
where was that?
This was just 2 or 3 miles away. It was near Naples. And of course, at that time there were no problems with aircraft or anything else. I
mean, the war had finished.
The war.
Do you remember?
On the verge of finishing.
Right.
You see, during that winter period, there was nothing happening up on the Gothic line. They had failed to get through, as they hoped, before the bad weather came. So it was left to the spring, and I'm not sure that the battalion hadn't, round about that time, hadn't been pulled out.
The battalion had gone to Greece, your battalion.
The battalion was going to Greece, yes. If they hadn't already gone. And so work consisted of giving talks to the troops. Again, some of these based upon current affairs. We'll say that mainly it was current affairs work. And what we did there, there were 3 of us at this point, because it's quite a big transit camp.
You don't know its name.
We were already getting preparations for the election, and we were having debates, and each of us, and to be perfectly fair, I was not strongly politically minded in any direction particularly, but one or two of them were, but it was arranged as if they were socialist minded or conservative minded, they should present the talk of one of the other parties.
Of another party?
Well, the other parties.
So if they were conservative,
yes,
they'd present Labour.
Not their own, but one of the others. This was what we worked out. And also, of course, giving talks on a very hot day in the middle of the square, in the middle of the camp, the companies or a company arranged round the sides in platoons, and you would stand up and give a talk again, current affairs generally and the war situation. And if it was out in the open, well, there were no maps involved, but I can remember the previous one giving talks where I was using a map and explaining the war situation to the troops there. And the war, while I was at this camp, the war came to an end.
How did you feel about that? I mean, were there any celebrations?
It was a VE. How did I feel about it? Oh, very happy, very relieved. And of course, after that, we got 10 days in Rome. And being in the sergeant's mess, of course, a group of us went off and we toured around Rome. And if we wanted to go off on our own, this is exactly what we did. And we went from amongst other things, to the Vatican and the Colosseum and the area around there, which of course is part of the original Rome. And I also walked out to St. Paul's. And that was on the outskirts of Rome, and particularly it was to see the grave of Keats, John Keats. There was plenty to do in Rome during that time, and when I came back, a VE day followed towards the end of the year. And I can remember that, I don't know whether it was because my time was coming to an end, because I was on what was called a B release.
Because
I was a paid teacher, Because I was a teacher on permanent staff, put it this way, Newcastle, my salary was paid, and so that meant that as soon as it was possible to release people like this, they should go back home, because of course obviously the educational system was in a bad way, because a lot of the men who were teachers were in the forces.
Now, before we go on to your release, what about the general election? There have been accusations that the army education thing were biased in favour of Labour, and particular mentions often been made of the series of pamphlets British Way and Purpose,
yes,
which have been accused of being a socialist manifesto.
Have you read any of them since then?
I have looked them.
But I don't remember there was any great bias attacks on that.
And you yourself?
I only remember that they presented the case as far as they could.
Do you think most of the men voted Labour?
I wouldn't know.
Did you vote yourself?
Yes.
And how did you feel about the result?
I don't know that I was particularly happy about it. It always seemed to me that, to go back over this, the troops were maligned a great deal over this. I think that the chief thing that was said, it really wasn't the case at all, was, well, Churchill's excellent in a time of war, in the time we've had now, the need of the time, that he was just a man, but when peace came, he wasn't the man for the job at all. Now, there was no proof about this, other than they mentioned perhaps his record in the field of politics since the beginning of the century. No, I was a little sad, because I don't know whether I mentioned it to him to you before, that apart from all the celebrations on Tunis, we all went to hear Churchill speak, and he was always most impressive, and the troops used to get the radios, they used these, particularly the signal section, and they of course had them in the companies, and therefore anybody who was interested, when Churchill's speech was on, the officers would all want to hear it, I presume, and certainly a lot of the men did. And as I've said to you, the troops, on the whole, you've got all along the line, you've got to speak, of course, for a small minority, perhaps, that it wouldn't mean a thing to them. But I think most of them, after all, we'd all more or less come from City Street. A lot of the men there had responsible jobs in City Street, and they weren't just manual workers necessarily, either. And so, in a way, I don't think I had any strong views at all on the matter.
So, but you didn't feel that the Army Education Corps was particularly biased then, from your experience?
From my experience.
In your area?
No, I didn't feel that it was.
Now, when were you demobilised?
I was demobilised in November. And, of course, I'd gone back. Yeah, I wasn't immobilised from there. I was mentioning to you that we were at this camp, and while we were there, we used to have time off, and I used to go in, for instance, to the concerts at the San Carlo, which were either operatic extracts. They used to have Sunday concerts like that, but the operas, and people like Gigli, for instance, those that became prominent just after the war. Gigli was already a name, but some of them were just coming on. And of course they came over here and sang at Covent Garden at Glyndebourne. And I went practically every week. I must have gone to about a dozen or more of these through the course of staying at this camp. But eventually, I was moved to Caserta, to Army headquarters, and did the educational department there. And again, we prepared talks and presented the news to the people, but it wasn't. I hadn't been there more than a fortnight or 3 weeks, and I was taken to Naples to be flown home. The B release came through in other words. And when we moved back to England, we flew back in a Lancaster bomber. And I was able, for instance, to have a seat where I could see the country we were going over, but the navigation instruments broke down. So the navigator, with his map, was peering through a hole in the floor to find which part of France he was flying over and so on. But it was broad daylight. It was perfectly easy. There were no panic stations or anything like that. And we landed somewhere up in the Midlands, somewhere near Stamford. Again, I've forgotten the name of the airport, and eventually got back to York and was demobbed from there.
No, there's never. Did you ever think of staying in the Army Education Corps?
No. No. And the reason being, of course, that I was very grateful to Newcastle taking me on a permanent staff after 6 months. They need not have paid my salary during the war at all, because I hadn't done the full year's probation. But I was, you couldn't, if you were on probation, you couldn't receive a full salary. So after 6 months, I was taken on a permanent staff, and I felt I owed them a debt. Now, of course, once I started teaching the rest of it, I had no desire whatsoever to stay in the army, because I knew anyway in peacetime it would get much more regimental. And that did not appeal to me at all. I know someone who was in Germany and was in the Army Educational Corps there and came back and taught in England, but the point is that he'd gone straight into it from school. Or he'd been called into the army, and he'd been called into the Army Educational Corps because either he was trained for teaching or he was already a teacher. I think maybe there were all sorts of people who taken in order to give lectures to the troops. Now, I don't think necessarily that the Army Educational Corps would have enough qualified people to do it. I always regarded, you see, the point where I'm a qualified teacher, and therefore should be able to carry out that work, even if it was only a local paid work.
When you got back, did you settle back into a job in civilian life?
I settled back. Settled back into Civvy Street, and the point is that I got back in November, and I think I started teaching almost straight away.
Had your war?
No pause.
Had your war experiences done you any damage, physically or mentally, or any good?
It took me a very long time to settle back. And it entailed, in the long run, leaving one school where I went back to a school in Bolham Street where I had been teaching when the evacuation took place. So the education office moved me to a secondary modern school, Warrior Street, where I stayed 5.5 years.
You were all right there?
I was all right there, yes.
Thank you very much.
Modern school, but I moved into one that had, because after all, the Education Act,